Hello, everyone. It's Albert Wu, and I am here on behalf of WHO Patient Safety. And this is session number 6 in our series on patient safety research. This is part of an 8-lecture introductory course. And today's session is on evaluating impact, that is, of your intervention, after implementation. I am a former senior advisor for WHO and am currently a professor at Johns Hopkins. I'm broadcasting both on GoToMeeting and on Doodle. So if there are some delays or if I appear not to be looking directly at the camera, for those of you who are viewing this on Doodle, my apologies. I may be attending to the other PC on my desk. Today, a little overview. To improve patient safety, it's also important to evaluate the effectiveness of solutions in real-life settings in terms of their impact, acceptability, and affordability. In this session, we'll talk about several methods of evaluation. Oh, I should also say that today's session is being recorded, and you can find an archive of these sessions on the WHO Patient Safety website. If you are having trouble finding this, please send an email to patientsafety@who.int, and we will send you the link. I'd like to thank those of you who are still on the course. I imagine a few of you may be attending for the first time, but many of you have participated in the previous sessions, and this cycle should be familiar to you now. These are components of the patient safety research cycle. We've talked about measuring harm, understanding causes, and identifying solutions. We are now up to stage 4, which is evaluating impact. Our next session will be on translating evidence into safer care. And honestly, session 4 and 5 could be transposed because we are trying to do really both of these things at the same time, and we certainly want to always be evaluating what we are doing. We're going to begin, as we are accustomed, with a little pretest. The answers to these questions will be available at the end of the session, but let's think about them now, and perhaps you can keep them in mind as we go through the slides. The first is, what are Don Abedian's 3 elements of quality of care, 3 elements to assess the quality of care? A, cost. Competency, culture. B, common, costly, controversial. C, structure, process, outcome. 4, or D, effectiveness, efficiency, and equity. Which 3 elements did Don Abedian champion? Question 2, which of the following is an example of a process evaluation? A, measuring if doctors clean their hands before visiting a patient. B, recording the cost effectiveness of reducing medication errors. C, surveying nurses about the safety climate in their units. And D, none of the above. So which of these is a process evaluation? Managers to invest in safety. A, an intervention increases safety, and does not increase expenses. B, a few steps can sometimes improve safety in several areas. C, an intervention improves safety and decreases hospital length of stay. D, all of the above. So what kind of evidence are we looking for to convince hospital managers that this is all worthwhile? Question four, how can we know if we have learned from a mistake? A, measure the presence of a policy or program. B, test staff knowledge about a policy or program. C, observe directly if staff use a policy or program appropriately. And D, all of the above. And five, which of the following are important aspects of safety culture? A, teamwork. B, the ability to speak up about concerns. C, leaders' attitudes about safety. D, all of the above. So why don't we think about these as we go ahead. So, first, how do you know if care is safer? We've talked about finding problems and then identifying interventions and implementing them. After you've done that, how do you know if care is safer now that you've done all those things? Well, we can look at the frequency of harm. We can look at the prevalence of appropriate care. We can look if changes in practice have been made in response to learnings. And we can look at if there are improvements in safety culture. Of course, there might be some other indicators, but these are four indicators that we often look at. Avidus Donabedian's classic model for assessing the quality of care. And he divides quality of care into three dimensions: the structure of care, the process of care, and the outcome of care. Structure is the more enduring elements of the healthcare system, including how well trained people are, as well as bricks, mortar, the physical elements of care, the equipment that is in place. Process is what we do, and outcome is what happens to patients. We can add to this the whole context of structure, process, and outcome occur in a context. The context is the culture that exists in the healthcare organization that we are talking about, or the healthcare system. And in this case, we're very interested in the culture as it relates to safety, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. The Institute of Medicine, in their also classic volume, Crossing the Quality Chasm, I would refer you to this. This was the report that followed to Air is Human. And in many ways, this includes even more useful information than that first volume. And the domains of quality that we're interested in improving are safety, which is the subject of this course, but also we're interested in effectiveness, patient-centeredness, efficiency, timeliness, and equity. So these are all things that we would like to improve or keep in mind as we try to improve safety. For the most part, much of the way we have designed our health systems is focused on improving perhaps the effectiveness of delivery, perhaps the efficiency and timeliness of care, and we haven't yet, or we are now just beginning to think about safety as an important thing to focus on more. Clinical perspective, which we mostly think about, but also the patient perspective. This is very important. People are interested in their own health, how they feel, what their quality of life is like, if they can do the things that they need to do, how satisfied they are, or how they evaluate the quality of the care they are getting. These are also important outcomes, and societal outcomes, utilization of health services, costs are important to healthcare organizations, hospitals, and society, governments, ministries of health. How do we know if we are safer? Well, we can measure safety, and as I mentioned earlier, we can measure harm. This is an outcome. We can measure whether or not care has been appropriate so that they can be applied. We can measure learning, whether or not it happens, and we can measure safety culture. Some examples: measuring appropriate care processes. This is something which is relevant to clean care is safer care, that is hand washing. During learning, we can audit whether specific actions are taken. Are people doing the things that we have taught them to do? We can measure safety culture. We'll talk about that specifically. We're going to talk about a couple of cost studies which also incorporate other outcomes. A prospective study by Bates looking at the cost, looking at a cost analysis in a cohort, and a cross-sectional study, a cost identification. Was organized by Kahn. Apologies for my jittery mouse button here. So hand washing or hand hygiene, the first global patient safety challenge of WHO was clean care is safer care, and it focused initially and primarily on improved hand hygiene. This figure may be familiar to you. There are five moments or five opportunities for hand hygiene that occur frequently. First, before touching a patient. These are for healthcare workers. Second, before a clean or aseptic procedure. Three, after body fluid exposure. Four, after touching a patient. And five, after touching a patient's surroundings, after touching things that the patient may have touched. And all of these are times when healthcare workers should clean their hands. So to evaluate whether a hand hygiene intervention has had the desired impact, we can look at process, or we can look at outcome. We can look at both. Processes include direct observation. You can look at the proportion of appropriate hand hygiene per total number of hand hygiene opportunities. How often did healthcare workers wash their hands or clean their hands? Divided by the number of moments that present themselves to the healthcare worker. We can also use indirect measurements. For example, we can measure the volume of alcohol-based hand rub that is used on a unit, since this is at least proportional and perhaps a pretty good estimate of how often people wash their hands, even though it doesn't look per opportunity or per moment. We can also look at outcomes, the incidence of healthcare-acquired infections, if you have some measure of that outcome. Have we learned? How can we measure whether or not we have learned from our mistakes? you can measure the presence of a policy or a program which has developed in response to an intervention or to a guideline. You can do testing of staff knowledge. You can ask staff about specific elements or awareness of a policy or a program. And you can do direct observation to see if they use that program or policy appropriately. So if we have a guideline or standard operating procedure, a policy or a program that we have put in place, we can use these measures to see whether or not healthcare workers seem to have learned from that directive, that intervention. Have we created safe culture? So many of our interventions are not directed only at a single problem, but they attempt to improve the culture of safety, the entire context within an organization that facilitates greater safety, more thinking about safety, more actions taken to improve safety. How can this be done? Well, an annual or more frequent assessment of culture of safety can be performed by surveying staff. This sort of thing evaluates staff attitudes and perhaps asks them to report about their behaviors regarding safety and teamwork. A good example of a questionnaire to measure safety culture is the Safety Attitudes Questionnaire. Another useful questionnaire is the ARC Patient Safety Attitudes Questionnaire. The SAQ, the Safety Attitudes Questionnaire, this is a version of that questionnaire called the SAQ Teamwork and Safety Climate Survey. This is administered to healthcare workers, and these are a few of the questions. One of the questions, or one of the statements to be endorsed: it is difficult to speak up if I perceive a problem in healthcare. So you are asking a healthcare worker if they feel comfortable speaking up if they perceive a problem. The response options: disagree strongly, disagree slightly, neutral, agree slightly, agree strongly. There is a certain wisdom that frontline healthcare workers have. And if you survey enough of them on a unit, then they can tell you what things are like. Secondly, a second question: physicians and nurses work together well as a well-coordinated team. This is a question about teamwork. People can tell whether or not they're working well with their coworkers or not. Three, medical errors are handled appropriately here. This is specifically about the handling of medical errors, and people endorse what they perceive about the climate, about the work milieu of their unit. Cost outcomes. There are actually lots of cost outcomes, so I'll say this very briefly before going ahead. You can simply identify the costs that are expended. These can be only from the perspective of the organization, how much care is spent on care by the organization. It can also be out of pocket from the patient and family. We can look at cost effectiveness, so the cost per outcome. Look at quality adjusted life years. We can look at disability adjusted life years. And getting into this more is really a little bit beyond the scope of this course. We can also do cost benefit analysis. How much do we actually save or spend on our interventions. How many dollars do we get for an intervention, perhaps? We're going to go through a couple examples of classic studies. As I have mentioned before, these studies are available on the WHO Patient Safety webpage. If you go to research, and then if you go to classic studies, there are PowerPoint presentations, which I have summarized here, for about 20 classic papers in patient safety research. This article is up. We seem to have lost the name of the first author, which is David Bates, D.W. Bates. This was published in JAMA, The Cost of Adverse Events in Hospitalized Patients, and you can link directly to the abstract if you click on the link that's on the website. The rationale for this study, drug events are common. 0.7%, almost 1% of hospital patients have an adverse drug event. On the other hand, hospital leaders tend to be skeptical about the financial impact of these things and be wary about making investments into systems to prevent them. So the investigators wanted to justify investing in interventions to reduce adverse drug events. Additional resource utilization associated with an adverse drug event. They expected that when there was an adverse drug event, it would be necessary to do things, the healthcare organization would spend money, perhaps that they could otherwise save. Research questions: what is the post-event, post-ADE length of stay caused by an ADE? What is the total cost of resource utilization during that additional length of stay? Are potential quality improvement efforts cost effective? The design was a cost analysis, which was study. Incidents, that is adverse drug events, were detected by self-report of nurses and pharmacists and by chart review. They classified out those incidents that were an adverse drug event. And they looked at length of stay and charges from billing data. And from those billing data, they estimated costs. This study took place at two big hospitals in Boston. The population was 4,000 admissions to a stratified random sample of medical and surgical units over 6 months. Within that population, within those 4,000 admissions, there were 47 adverse drug events that were detected. They looked at a sample of those, 190, for which they had enough data to calculate the cost of adverse drug events. They didn't have good cost data for all of them. As I mentioned, they used three methods of data collection. They had nurse investigators go to personnel and say, have you had any adverse drug events? And then they reviewed charts. They also collected other data, patient data, demographics, insurance, type of adverse drug event, if it was in the chart. And they looked at the outcome variables, length of stay, and total charges from which they calculated costs. key findings from this study. They had a 6% incidence of adverse drug effects, even higher than the 1% that might have been estimated. 28% were preventable. More than half were judged to be significant. 30% were judged to be serious, and 12% were judged to be life-threatening. 1% were actually fatal, that perhaps three of those incidents. Length of stay increased by an average of 2 days for all adverse drug events and 4.6 days for those that could have been prevented if care had been better. Total cost increased by $3,000 for all adverse drug events and almost $6,000 for preventable adverse drug events. So if those could have been averted, they could have saved $5.6 million U.S. dollars per year. So this is the kind of evidence that a hospital might find convincing. If you put in this intervention, you could save $5 million. It may cost something to implement the intervention, but within a year, you're going to save $5 million. And a fairly sophisticated system to try to catch and prevent adverse drug events. In this case, they could both improve patient care and reduce expenses related to ADEs, a win-win. Dr. Bates commented that this kind of research is feasible anytime a group is collecting primary data about adverse events and has access to cost or resource utilization data. If he had had to do this completely by itself, it would have been expensive, but it didn't represent a very big added cost on top of what was already being done. Going on to our next study, this is a study published by Khan et al. In 2001, Cost of Nosocomial Infection in Turkey, an estimate based on university hospital data. And you can click to the full text or to the abstract if you go to the PowerPoint presentation on the WSHO website. This was a case control study and a cost identification analysis. So this was a very relatively simple, straightforward attempt to identify what costs were expended. Costs of nosocomial infections were estimated through chart reviews. Of patients were found to have infections. And they compared the costs to the medical costs of matched control patients who did not have such infections. The objective of the study was to estimate the potential cost savings that could be achieved if you could control nosocomial infections in hospitalized patients in Turkey. This was also done in a university hospital in Ankara. It was in fact done a while ago in 1994. It's an 871-bed hospital. They looked at all patients admitted for 3 months. They selected 82 cases based on the presence of an infection who also had adequate data in the hospital record to estimate resource use and thus cost. They used a number of matching variables to select 56 of their infections with 56 non-infected controls. And they based their cost estimates on 50 of these for whom they had enough data. You can see that there are have all of the data elements that you would really like. On the other hand, these are existing data. You don't have to spend extra money to collect the data yourself. Data collection, patient information was obtained from detailed records kept by the infection control clinic. during the three-month period. Again, this was a controlled case matching approach. They matched on age, gender, whether or not the patient was in the ICU, and the primary diagnosis. They grouped them, age and diagnosis, into larger categories. It's not always so easy to do this kind of matching. It's fairly labor intensive. But in a case control study, the matching is really the key step, because you want to make sure that people are matched to people who are otherwise very similar. The estimated costs from patient bills or charges. Patients are often required to buy drugs themselves from the market, so they looked at the prescribed drugs listed in the medical record, and then they estimated their costs. And they took average costs. They estimated cost and resource use categories for things like the hospital bed, procedures, lab tests, x-rays, and was used, and they estimated costs. They didn't look at the actual expended costs, which would have been difficult, would have been even more difficult. So from their 78 nosocomial patients, they identified 56 patients. Urinary tract infection was the far and away the most common type of infection. It was about a third of those infections. However, many patients, nearly a third, experienced more than one infection. They experienced multiple infections. More results. On average, the length of stay for an infection patient was 21 days, which is 4 days longer than a non-infected patient, 17 days. So infected patients who were matched to controls were needed to stay in the hospital longer. We are assuming that this was due to their infection. On average, total cost of a stay for an infected case, $2,200, was 22% higher. And for a multiply infected case, it was 72% higher than for a non-infected case. So these people were also costing more. So their main conclusions that there are substantial potential cost savings to be had if you could control nosocomial infections. And in particular, hospital administrators should try to prevent multiple infections because they have even higher costs. A significant benefit could be achieved simply by reducing urinary tract infections. However, about 75% of all nosocomial infections, and they determined this from other analyses, could be prevented by adopting a few simple steps. For example, promoting regular reporting of infection, in-service training of staff for infection control measures, and I should add simply better hand hygiene. All of these simple steps taken at an organization level could prevent all of the different kinds of infections. When we asked the authors, would this research be feasible and applicable in a developing country? They said yes. Every country and health system has their own characteristics. However, this needs to be kept in mind. You need to adapt the research to your setting. And files are not updated, and some patients have multiple files. So it's important to make sure that patient files are accurate. And one more reason to keep good files, besides the fact that they're necessary for all sorts of to support additional work to understand and improve quality and safety. Further reflections, this type of study is extremely worried that they're going to look bad. So what they did was they tried to get them involved in all stages of the study and to get their advice and suggestions. So what was done was really done together as a team with administrators and providers. Demonstrating value, one of the most crucial hurdles was convincing the Hospital Management and Infection Control Committee that the research would be useful in demonstrating the benefits of controlling nosocomial infections, and it should not be viewed as an effort to measure the quality. It should be used as an effort to improve quality and control costs. So, in summary, not just for these two studies, but for all of these methods that we have looked at to measure impact, it's possible to measure impact in terms of measuring outcome, in terms of measuring process, and we can also measure the underlying culture, which is the context of safety. And development of measures to evaluate safety and to evaluate the success of interventions, because they can be barriers to doing the study, and they are more likely to use the results if they participated in the design of what was done. Additional comment is that organizations should identify a few useful measures that they then collect systematically. Those measures, for example, might be for the lab to count the number of urinary tract infections that they have, so that these results can then be related to other things that are happening in the organization. Study and the Kahn study. The next article is a reference to some measures, some ways to think about measuring safety from Peter Pronovost, a study on the safety attitudes questionnaire from Brian Sexton, and a study published by a group of authors mostly affiliated with the World Health Organization, What Have We Learned About Interventions to Reduce Medical Errors, just published this year in the annual Views of Public Health. You can also go to www.who, Patient Safety, Research, Strengthening Capacity, Classics, to look at the PowerPoint slides that go along with these and 20 classic studies. So to quickly review, this is now the post-test to go with the pre-test that we looked at the top of the presentation. What are Don Obedient's three elements to assess quality of care? Cost competency culture. I just made them up because they are three C's. Common, costly, controversial. Well, I think that research should often look at topics that are common, costly, and controversial, but these don't have anything to do with Don Obedient. Don Obedient, of course, taught us that we can use structure and process and outcome to assess quality of care, effectiveness, efficiency, equity. These are goals, I think. Which of the following is an example of a process for visiting a patient? Process of care is what we do. This is a process that we should do. So this is, in fact, a process evaluation. Recording cost effectiveness, well, this is really an outcome evaluation. Surveying nurses about climate, this is a measure of culture. So A is the correct answer. What evidence might convince hospital managers to invest in safety? An intervention increases safety, does not increase costs? Yes. A few steps can sometimes improve safety in several areas. Sounds good to me. An intervention improves safety and decreases hospital length of stay. A win-win also. Answer all of the above. How can we know if you've learned from a mistake? Measure the presence of a policy or program that has been put in place. That is, have they done something? So that's yes. Test staff knowledge about that policy or program? Yes. Observe directly if that policy or program is being used? Yes, all of the above. Which of the following are important aspects of safety culture? Teamwork, very important. Ability to speak up about concerns, absolutely. Leaders' attitudes about safety, Yes, I think we at least alluded to this, so the answer is all of the above. We do have a little time. We wanted to do two things. First, just looking at those questions, those three questions, and I'll go back to them. Safety culture or safety climates. How important are these elements of safety in your organization? And then I also just wanted to take questions, but let's go back. So, difficult to speak up, work well together as a team, the institution handles medical errors appropriately. How do these apply to your organization, the setting that you are working in? If you would please send through messages, I think that Mai will collect them and we can discuss them. And also, if you have any questions in general, we'll try to answer them now. Or if we don't have time, I will try to answer them, and we will post them, as we have done for previous lectures. So think about your organization, these elements of safety culture, safety climates, how do these elements apply to your organization. If you have other comments about safety climate, whether it exists, whether it exists to some extent, whether you really wish you had some, please volunteer those comments as well. If you can think of other elements of culture that we should be talking about that are important, please volunteer those also. I'm just going to pause for a minute to let you do this, and then we will review. So we have some questions, which I will try to address. And if we get some more comments about safety culture, we'll get to those in a minute. So I think we can try to get through these questions quickly. The first question, is there a peer-reviewed literature source for the SAQ survey, any psychometric properties? So there's been quite a few publications, including some literature synthesis on these, Patty, and I did cite a reference to Sexton. I hope that will do. If you actually just do a search on Sexton, it's actually J.B. Sexton, you'll find it. How safety attitudes questionnaire creates safe culture. So I think the safety attitudes questionnaire can tell you what the culture is like. I think an interesting thing that has been done in organizations is to show that this between different units, one ward and another, than it sometimes does between local. Local managers have a big influence on how people feel what work is like on their publicize that. You can discuss it. The organization can try to take steps to improve just those very specific things that were identified as problems by the survey. So this can be used to help identify areas, and then it can also be used to measure progress. If you make changes, if you have a big campaign on patient safety, if you educate people on patient safety, if you have a big engagement campaign, you can measure safety culture before and after, and in fact, it has been shown to improve. Next week's session, which is called Translating Evidence, how do you do this in organizations? Ida's question, are qualies and dollies measured in cost effectiveness or cost utility? So in a way, both of these things are related. In cost utility analyses are just a special case of a cost effectiveness analysis in which you're using utility as the outcome, as the denominator. Qualies and dollies are, in this case, the denominator. The cost is the numerator, and qualies, dollies, utility are all numerator, are all denominators. I see. Maysoon has exactly the same question. So, how about that? So Maysoon's question is also answered. How can we use benchmarks in patient safety? Are there websites for benchmarks? There is actually, if the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, IHI, has a lot of information on benchmarks. Benchmarks are simply attainable goals that can be achieved. And they are a target that you can try to use. You may try to reduce the number of urinary tract infections to zero in a hospital, but it may be that no hospital is capable of doing that. It may be that some hospitals in your district, in your country, can reduce to 10% or incidence or 1% incidence. That might be a benchmark. Now we're getting into difficulty speaking up. I believe nurses understand to do so, leaving them with their hands tied. Kim, that is really the problem, I think. Many nurses understand that it's part of their job to speak up to protect the patient. In the U.S., I know that the sort of the motto or the slogan of many organization of many nursing boards is that the nurse has the responsibility to protect patients, but the people they work speak up, and that is a problem. What hospital administrators and other leaders need to understand is if that people don't speak up, then you don't know when there are problems. This is a problem for the whole organization. And this question, I can speak up when I perceive a problem, this is a very strong predictor of the number of complications that exist in units, even the number of deaths in the intensive care units, the number of infections, because those units where it's hard to speak up, they are not taking good, they're not using the opportunities they have to improve. Saying in my organization, it's still difficult to speak up about problems, although there are no clear guidelines or policies. So we start writing guidelines or start making staff aware of this. This is something that can be done too. So for example, my own hospital has a policy which says that it is the patient's right to know when something goes wrong in their care. It is the duty of the hospital and the physicians to tell the patients when things go wrong. It is made clear in other guidelines that it is people's responsibility to speak up because everyone can contribute to improving safety. Again, we're going to talk about this in a little to safer care within organizations. This will be the subject of our session next week. In my setting, staff may have different perceptions or definitions of medical errors. Do you think we need to describe this item more clearly by adding examples, maybe? That's Trisasi. I think that this is very important for two reasons. I think in many ways it's better to talk about safety problems that you observe, hazardous situations, injuries that occur, whether or not they're due to errors or not, any faults or any failures or any places where the system is not doing a good enough job. I think that in general, it is best to say, can you identify a situation which is hazardous? Where do you identify a place where a patient might be injured in the future? And then what can we do? It's very important to appreciate that staff do have different perceptions. They have different perspectives, and they see different things. They see different parts of the work. So all of them have important things to contribute to the greater understanding of the whole process of care and can identify where there are failure points or points where care may be particularly risky. So I think that this also needs to be emphasized. Alia says, regarding safety culture, what do you think of the validity and robustness of using the Manchester Patient Safety Framework versus the Safety Attitudes Questionnaire? I am entirely agnostic about Manchester versus SAQ. I think that all of these questionnaires do a good job and are probably good enough for your situation. I think what you should do is probably take a look at several of these questionnaires, look at the questions particularly cases where they have been used in a setting or with a patient population that looks like your patient population. That might lead you to choose one or the other, but the Manchester framework, the Safety Attitudes Questionnaire, the AHRQ questionnaire, I think they all have strengths. We are, I might have mentioned last session, our own group is about to test the Safety Attitudes Questionnaire in a rural hospital in Gujarat population, in a Gujarati population in India. We'll see if it works. You should probably do the same thing. The safety climate questionnaires capture safety elements of people at various levels within safety culture of an organization that regulates or safety standards of for healthcare organizations, for example, a regulatory agency. I'm not aware of a specific survey that does this. However, you could ask some of the same questions, I suppose. You would have to sort of pose your question carefully, look at what might apply and what might not apply. And it would be very interesting, I think, Khaled, to ask these questions to within some of these organizations. You would hope that these organizations are very safety conscious, but I suspect that they vary how sophisticated they are about this. And in fact, the workers within those organizations, perhaps even more than the top leaders of those organizations, might be able to tell you some very interesting things. So very interesting question, Khaled. May soon had a question, how can we evaluate the impact of training programs on health safety? So if you're interested in training programs, I think that pre and post designs are useful. I think that you could administer questionnaires to know whether or not people know about individual elements of the science of safety. You could administer safety attitudes questionnaires to see if their attitudes have changed. You can't observe them directly. This is not an efficient way to figure out whether or not has been, but I think that but I think that all of these things could be done. Let's see. Mahuina says, "Hi, I work in a government organization. Creates to solve problems between patients and minimal effort culture that is prevalent in hospitals and other healthcare units. How do we do research about quality and cost effects of no safety culture in healthcare?" Well, I think that even though it may be that the minimal effort culture is prevalent, I think that you will find that there are specific hospitals and there are specific units where there is more than minimal effort. There are groups and individuals who are doing better jobs. And I think the first thing to do might be to document what this these differences. It would be very interesting also if you have any indicators of patient outcomes, safety indicators, other indicators of quality of care, including just simply hot deaths of patients or infection rates, to see how culture relates to outcomes. That might be a start. Shiva Ganesh says, can we permit media persons to collect news on behalf of the public to highlight issues in rigid staff setup and closed setup? I don't understand the question completely, but I think that it might be an interesting thing to do to make this. I think this could be an interesting story for the media to highlight. In this way, this might bring a different kind of pressure on organizations, and I think the media is in some ways the fourth estate, can highlight an importance of a problem. So I think this could perhaps be done. Ghazal asked questions, do we set measures to process and outcomes only, or we can set measures to structure? You can certainly set measures to structure. For example, the Joint Commission in the United States and the Joint Commission International, most of their measures are measures of structure. So, for example, do you have adequate numbers, an adequate portion of trained staff? Do you have particular policies in place? That's a measure of structure. Do you have a safety committee? Do you have a quality assurance committee? Is there a director of safety? Do you have a policy statement or standard operating procedures about handling problems? Do you have do root cause analyses? All of these are measures of structure, and these are certainly good measures of, in many ways, safety culture. In another way, at an organizational level, may certainly do a good thing to do. In my organization, David says, in my organization, there is no clear-cut approach on reporting medical errors during the care of the patient. We have no system in place to gather such information. What can I possibly do to increase awareness about patient safety in my organization or possibly get something started? So David, I think the thing to do would be to begin to institute, perhaps on just a unit level, an incident reporting system. There is quite a lot written now on incident reporting systems. In fact, there is a guide on the WHO patient website to incident reporting systems. Sometimes these are also called reporting and learning systems, and this is an important tool to understanding where there are problems and things that forum on Doodle to see if I have any questions. I do not actually see any questions in the Doodle forum. I do see that I have, or at least I used to have some participants. They may have already left since we are just slightly over the hour. So I'm going to close here. This was a great discussion. Thank you very much. I think that in many ways our interactive session worked better today than it has in the past. We are also learning. I'm not sure what our measure of learning should be. In any case, thank you very much. Thank you to Mai for putting up a thank you slide there for me. I probably better than me trying to go to my thank you slide. And I hope to see many of you next week for our seventh session, which is Translating Evidence to Safer Care. In this session, we're going to talk about some strategies for how research findings and guidelines, some of the things that we talked about today, and from today's session, I think we can have a really good discussion. So I'm looking forward to next week. Unfortunately, we have to wait for 6 days, 23 hours to do this, but I think it'll be I think it'll be exciting. So thank you all very much. I'm going to sign off here. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.